What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast number 198, Bracing versus Taping. This week, our special guest is Brett McQueen. He was previously on episode number 65, where we talked about functional movement systems, and then episode 112, where we're talking about making a difference as a young professional. He is an athletic trainer, and the first time I read this, I thought it said biochemist, but it's biomechanist or biomechanist at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri. Also the CEO of Lightning Performance Solutions and an adjunct professor at Park University in athletic training. All right. So that is Brett McQueen, the biomechanist. And he was talking briefly about he gets to do the 3D imaging for some of the kids that have some gait issues. And what were you telling me there, Brett?
So primarily what we're looking at right now are kids with various forms of dystonia, cerebral palsy, crouch gait, stuff like that, to try to help figure out what they need done to increase their quality of life and movement.
All right. There you go. All right. So the show notes from this, the resources and things like that should be able to be found on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/bracing. So again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/bracing. If you're listening to this at a later date, then that'll be the easiest way to find the show notes there. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, we've got
Cooper,
Joshua,
Juanita,
Nicholas,
Tiana,
and Tiana. All right. And you can use hashtag DSMB on Twitter. My Twitter person is not here, but I got my phone right beside me, so hopefully I can catch those. Then, of course, our website has the links to every different way. So I want to start off with a little bit of listener feedback. Craig is in the chat room here. Craig Lewin was talking about episode 189, where we were talking to Greg Evans about products, sports medicine products. And he said, I thought the webinar was very informative and gave some new ideas of products that the high school and athletic training program may want to invest in, especially the portable cooling system. So, Craig, thanks for listening into those. Thanks for leaving some comments and continually listening in. And also, he's going to be joining us later in the year, or should the plan is for him to join us later in the year and talk about a different topic. Without much further ado, we're going to get right to Brett McQueen and bracing versus taping.
Mr. Brett McQueen, tell us what you're up to in sports medicine since the last time we spoke.
I am up to all sorts of trouble in sports medicine. No, I'm just kidding. Staying very active this year on speaking. I think I've got 5 different conferences I'm presenting at this year in the Midwest. Working on some new research with some OCD lesion stuff and looking at some kinetics and kinematics with pre-op and post-op ACL patients. So looking at a lot of the research side of things and education side of things. I'm teaching adjunct this semester for Park University, teaching pharmacology, which is always just a rip-roaring good time. So,
all right. I was an athletic training major, but what are you teaching in pharmacology to athletic training students?
Pharmacology to athletic training students. So you have all sorts of different drugs and substances out there on the market and not on the market that your student athletes could be using. Maybe they're prescribed by a physician. Maybe they're using them recreationally. Regardless, as athletic trainers, we need to understand what they do to the body, how they make people act and react, what they can do to enhance or inhibit athletic performance, and having a general knowledge of pharmacology helps us be able to communicate interprofessionally better with physicians, mid-level providers, nurses, physical therapists, whoever we need to communicate with.
All right.
And can you tell us about some of the research you have been studying in regards to bracing or taping?
So the research that's out there on bracing and taping is all over the place. One thing to keep in mind with research is you can make almost anything say the results that you want them to say. So all research in general should be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt, knowing that. In general, what's out there looks a lot at kinetics and kinematics on a treadmill with different bracing or taping options. Kinetics are ground movement forces. Kinematics are looking at joint rotations and angles. when you're looking on a treadmill with the different braces and tapes, that limits your ability to extrapolate that data to what you would see in the field. How does that translate to a terribly maintained grass football field? Or how does that translate to a track? How does it translate to a wood chip cross country course? The answer is it really doesn't. It's great in a lab-based setting, but it doesn't really help us understand what those different tape jobs and braces actually do when they're being worn by people out in the field. A lot of it is done on healthy individuals who have never had an ankle issue, and those of us in sports medicine, I mean, I think ankle issues are kind of a dime a dozen at this point. You see them all the time, whether it's somebody who just kind of rolls it and tweaks it, or whether it's a full-blown big ankle sprain. So the research that's out there says, you know, this brace might be better than this brace, might be better than that tape job. What it ultimately comes down to is looking at patient-specific interventions. And what does that patient need to take care of their instability or their apprehension? So one thing that many sources, including the NATA position statement on the care of ankle instability, is you have to have a comprehensive rehabilitation or injury prevention program, and that taping and bracing alone are simply not adequate.
Okay, so you're saying taping or bracing by themselves, or even combined, they're not adequate?
So most of the literature agrees that chronic instabilities are not going to be helped by any sort of taping and bracing. There is some evidence to support with reasonably acute injuries that they can help provide a little bit of security near post-injury, but they are not to be used long-term. And most of the literature agrees on that. There are a couple fairly weak studies out there, and I'm not citing specific things because my reference list is a couple hundred studies. If you want to go look at the literature yourself, feel free. You can find it on any sort of different implement. But all of them do agree that you need to get away from the taping and bracing after an ankle injury. It's just a matter of it's a patient-specific, time-based return afterwards, and how soon you get out of the taper brace.
Almost all the research is showing that chronic
long-term taping and bracing for chronic ankle instability is, they don't use the term completely worthless, but I will. It's worded a little bit more eloquently in the literature, but it's actually starting to predispose people to further injury.
Okay, so that is quite interesting. Now, can you also define long-term?
Long-term, greater than probably a couple months, so greater than a season.
All right, so greater taping them for more than a season for chronic ankle instability is actually encouraging them to, or not encouraging, but predisposing them to other injuries.
It certainly could be. That's one of the theories out there. As you well know, the literature often is 5 to 10 years behind what we actually see in practice. If you look at the body as a whole, there's a joint by joint approach, and the ankle joint should be a very mobile joint, the knee joint a very stable joint, the hip joint mobile joint, and they go mobile, stable, every other joint going up the chain. When you take a joint that should be mobile, good dorsiflexion, good plantar flexion, and appropriate inversion, eversion, and make it stable with some sort of external orthotic such as tape or brace, you create instability at other joints. You create overpressure at other joints. So we're starting to see a lot more of our knee injuries are kids that report chronic ankle instabilities that they tape or brace.
As I was promoting the episode, Mike McKinney, he's been on here a couple of times as well, he had just said something that bracing or taping by themselves wasn't good. You need to have a total chain plan. So like
absolutely
the knee or the hip, you need to have ways to strengthen those, the core. So, and then
absolutely,
yeah, talking about the same thing, if you make the ankle not move, then the knee has to compensate there. So
sure, yeah, the force has to go somewhere, and our bodies are great at dissipating force, but unfortunately sometimes it's too much through the weakest spot. And if the weakest spot is your knee, well, bye-bye knee. Another thing that we're starting to look at, and I don't know why we haven't looked at it the entire time, but at what point would you brace and send a grade 2 or grade 3 ACL sprain back out to play? It probably isn't the same week or the week after.
Probably, yes.
So why do we do that with the ankle? Is the tissue any different? Is the healing process any different for the ankle or the or other things as opposed to the knee or shoulder or elbow or pick one? You know, we forget that the healing process still has to occur, and if we're not doing a good comprehensive rehabilitation program to address not only the ankle but the hips, spine, knees, everything, are we missing the boat with our ankle injuries? Did we, as a profession, kind of get the hallmark of, oh, we can get you back quick, just throw some tape on it and go? Is that good medicine? That's ultimately the question we're asking here, is that good medicine and is that good healthcare to just get you back as quick as we can?
All right, so kind of on that same note, you know, we get doctor's notes all the time here that say no PE or sports for 2 weeks, right? So following the same thing, is that good medicine to for a doctor to send a kid to school saying no PE or sports for 2 to 3 weeks following an ankle sprain?
I don't see any reason why they can't be in school.
No PE or sports, not...
Is 2 weeks a magic number? No. Is 2 weeks probably a general guideline of you need this long for kind of the pain to go away, to get that the inflammatory phase gone, to start getting back to function? I think 2 weeks is probably about right. If you look at the different healing phases, you've got the immediate inflammatory phase, and then you've got your proliferation phase and your maturation phase. That proliferation phase and inflammatory are going to kind of overlap in that 5 to 12 day range. So I think, you know, 2 weeks to kind of get that inflammation gone and get back to a baseline function and normal ambulation is perfectly reasonable. Now, at the end of that 2 weeks, are you magically healed and yep, here you go, ready to go? No, I don't think so. It's still needing some rehab and some reconditioning, training, balance, range of motion, all sorts of things. So 2 weeks is really just to get you back to normal ambulation. Remember, all insurance companies are focused on are activities of daily living. Can you walk? Well, we know as athletic trainers that with our athletes, the activities of daily living are a little bit more strenuous than that. So while the doctor's recommendations are to get back to walking, we need to take it a step further. And what do we need to do to take it that step further? Because taping and bracing is not exactly rehab. Taping and bracing is not going to be your answer. It might help you get there, but it should not be the end-all, be-all treatment.
All right, so... as we talked, we said long-term bracing and taping. Now, you know, we said that taking a joint and making it immobile with taping creates problems throughout. So from what I'm hearing, and is this correct in the research, that taping an ankle is non-beneficial or even detrimental in all situations, or a majority of situations. How about that?
In a majority of situations for long-term use, meaning past once one injury is healed, yes, it is probably detrimental to their function. You get used to having that tape, that extra support, that pressure on those different sensory nerves are going to decrease input from your foot and ankle mechanoreceptors. It's going to decrease what your body does to stabilize and combat other injuries. So, yes, having that long-term pressure on there is probably going to be a detriment to your overall function. Again, the research is trying to catch up with that trend. So there are a few studies out there right now suggesting that, but it is certainly not the norm. What is the norm in the literature right now is comprehensive rehabilitation prevention programs, really working to get out of the tape and braces. If you have to do one or the other, bracing has been shown to be leaps and bounds more effective than taping.
All right, so some of the questions that we had were just about the actual research process. And so go ahead, Tiana.
Brett, what different variables did you look at in taping?
So there are lots of different variables looked at in taping. Certainly the different types of tape jobs have been evaluated. Tightnesses, what is between the skin and the tape, whether it's just adhesive on skin, is there a pre-wrap barrier, the power tape with power flex has been evaluated. In general, they all have been shown to be fairly loose when it comes to friction between the skin and the tissues below. So nothing's ever going to be tight enough to provide a good external support. And those things loosen so much over time that none of the tape jobs have been shown to be real great for controlling any of the tarsal bones. Most of the research has actually shifted towards bracing in recent years and looking at different types of braces. So a lot of the taping literature is, 10 to 20 plus years old. The most recent stuff is on different braces, certainly ASOs and active ankles, and name your brand, and they've had a study or two done on them, I'm sure. What they're looking at is the same things, is how well does that external orthotic support the tarsal bones? Does it control calcaneal movement? Does it control the tibiofibular rotation? Does it control plantar flexion, dorsiflexion, inversion, eversion? Does it control all that stuff well? And that's what those studies are looking at. Again, mostly on treadmills and in research lab areas. All right. Does that answer your question?
Yes. What about bracing?
What about bracing? So, again, I kind of answered the taping and bracing together there. They're really looking at how well do those control the ankle. The biggest problem with a lot of that research is it loses above the ankle. They don't look at how the knee functions, how the hip functions, how the spine functions in those different ankle orthotics. They are focused on one joint, and one joint alone is not going to cut it. You got to look at how the whole body functions.
All right, so is there any research going on like that? I know you said that we're kind of the research or the data always seems to be about 5 years behind. And is there something that is looking at, something that we can see now that is looking at how the brace does everything?
Yeah, there are a ton of studies out there. You can just search any brace, and you're gonna find a study that's been done in the last 5 years on it. In the athletic training world, Dr. Tom Kaminsky is doing a ton of work up in, I believe, the Delaware area, on different ankle interventions, ankle sprains, kinematics, looking at what different types of braces are more effective than others. I know he's one of the big researchers in it. There are a few other authors that are not coming to mind on the NATA position statement that are also big ankle researchers. If you want to look specifically at those guys and what their literature has shown, that's certainly an option. I'm trying to get it pulled back up here to give you specifics. The computer went to sleep on me. Yeah, so Dr. Tom Kaminsky, Dr. Jay Hertel, both of those guys have done quite a bit in the bracing world and athletic training. So certainly give them a good search.
All right, so one of the questions we have, obviously in the research, you always have to have a control if you're doing some sort of experiment. Because, you know, we're learning how to be good scientists here. Some of them are freshmen in biology. You got to learn the scientific method. So how can you create a control for ankle taping if you're doing research? Because I would say that my tape jobs are very similar each time, but not exactly. But then there's so many other things that, you know, is this their right ankle or their left ankle? Is this this type of tape, like you said earlier, the PowerFlex versus the Power Tape versus the pre-wrap, and then is the person injured or not? And so then it's all subjective data. Does that even exist?
That's a phenomenal question, and it really doesn't. It's one of the inherent flaws with both research and looking at a movement. It's a good thing in research. You need to have those strict controls. What you're talking about looking at is sort of a cohort study where you look and compare a control to an experimental. Certainly we should look at the controlled trials, if there are any out there, and kind of the retrospective, what has gone on over time. It's almost impossible to get a good solid control with taping. I think that's one of the reasons they've gone to the braces, is you can put the same brace on and it's going to be the same brace every single time. That's certainly one way to take some subjectivity out of it. Another thing that we have to keep in mind as evidence-based practitioners is evidence-based is threefold. It certainly takes the research component into account, but you also have clinician expertise and patient values. In the realm of patient values, a lot of patients just like their ankles taped. They feel more comfortable that way. Well, we know from the research that that's probably not a great thing. And we as clinicians know, I mean, man, that's costly. I don't know that it's actually doing anything for you. I know that, that might be creating more of an injury risk. So those are tough conversations to have. You've got the patient and parent family values that want the taping, but you know from your experience and your science to back you up that maybe that's not a great idea. That's where it gets muddy. And unfortunately, it still just is pretty muddy. But to go back to your question, there is no way to reproduce the same tape job every single time unless you have a robot do it on the same exact ankle every single time. And I'm not sure that exists out there. That'd be an expensive robot. Be cool, but
yeah, so that's what I was thinking. I mean, there's just far too many variables.
Exactly.
So
how has this information been received by athletic trainers, coaches, or parents?
Well, I've been looked at like I have three heads before. My coaches love it because they can't now. You know, the rule is you've got to actually be injured and doing something to fix that injury for me to even consider putting anything on you. There is no mass taping. There is no, hey, can you just wrap me? No, we're not going to do that. My coaches love it. My parents, many of them, well, we taped everything, every single practice, every single game. Well, you know, I can appreciate that. I understand the history of that. I understand why, but that's not how we're doing things anymore. If your son or daughter gets injured, then we'll evaluate it from there. By implementing some different injury prevention and rehab plans to the teams that I'm working with. I think in the last 2 years, I've had 4 or 5 ankle sprains total. Football, basketball, baseball, track, all those. 4 or 5 with 2 high schools. You know, so that's, it's fairly good when you're looking at, you know, what things used to be.
Actually, I would say it's probably too good to be true. Right. So I know, like, if you go back to episode 65, where we talked about FMS, and I think you said you had 4 non-contact injuries in 2 seasons or 4 seasons with baseball or something like that. I should have, you know, I don't have the exact numbers, but it seems too good to be true.
I had 4 non-contact, the first year with that baseball program, and I had 0 non-contact the second year.
And so, again, applying those same principles, looking at the muscular dysfunctions, does the same, has the basic same basic effect for the ankle as well?
Absolutely.
All right. So, again, just to be clear, and if I'm going to have somebody highlight this section to show their coaches. All right. So current research is showing that taping an ankle is not only non-effective, it can also predispose your athlete to injury.
Correct. Right.
So then they could take that little snippet out, and then they could show it to their coaches as an athletic trainer and say, look, this is on the Sports Medicine broadcast, except for I just mumbled that there and messed that up. But
absolutely.
All right. So cool. So now we can wrap it up, right? All right. So since we're talking about braces, actually, one thing I wanted to ask first was when I did my internship with the Texans, they would put pre-wrap on or put heel and lace pads, pre-wrap, and then stretch tape, and they put like one round of white tape over that. Now, they do that so that they don't get fined.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they did then, and that was, you know, 12 years ago, right? So,
sure.
Is that just because of old school coaches? I mean, surely if you're looking at this research, those guys in the NFL, they're always on the leading edge, right? So
they're not, actually. The NFL is often light years behind with a lot of things, and that's because there's so much money involved. And in order to make that type of a policy change, you have to demonstrate that it's pretty much foolproof before the NFL is going to change anything. And I'm not sure we're there yet with the ankle stuff. You know, there's, to get completely off topic for a moment from ankles, there is a new school out there on spine boarding, and that spine boarding athletes is actually causing more problems after injury than not spine boarding. There's more movement on a spine board than just a normal cot. So, but yet we still see the NFL doing spine boarding rather than using a scoop stretcher, or just a standard cot to transport those patients. So it's one of those things that it's going to take a while for the policy to change. I won't speak to whether or not that was probably a good idea 12 years ago. I know that with those professional sports, you kind of do everything you possibly can to try because of the money that's involved. When you're talking about a high school that has significantly lower budget, we have good evidence to support that it's probably a waste of time and money to tape. In fact, it might actually cost you more money to do the taping with various other medical bills from other injuries it could cause. So I think on a small scale, we have plenty of evidence to support not doing it. Whether or not you're going to change the NFL's mind, that's another beast.
Right. But again, like you just said, they're going to do everything possible. So in the NFL, it's a different story. They have the money to just do it, to tape them up for a 30-minute walkthrough and then, you know, that kind of thing. But here at the high school, you know, I'm on the secondary athletic school's Facebook, and they're always, or on Twitter, people are always asking about, what kind of tape do you like best? Because I can't afford the most expensive tape, but, you know, I don't like the cheap tape. And so if we're trying to be most cost effective, then we're going to really put our money into rehab equipment, foam rollers or mm-hmm. AirX pads or another athletic trainer to help facilitate the manpower needed to rehab that many kids with injuries.
Sure.
And then also training in identifying deficiencies like the FMS, SFMA, or those mm-hmm. various types of systems there. So
sure. The case of tape that I'm currently on, I opened in September of 2014.
And how many practices or games are you working per week?
All week. I mean, this week I've got 8 or 10 games this week. And alone, this week alone.
So less than one roll a month.
Yeah.
Probably. All right. All right. Okay, so now that we kind of come to a consensus, and there's plenty of research out there showing that taping or bracing is not the best, right? So we're still going to want to put a brace in for support. Out of all that research, was there any recommendations for style or brand for braces?
Personally, I like the ASOs. There are a few different ones that are very similar and how they support. So whatever your brand of choice is, I don't get any kickback from anybody, so I'm not really gonna throw out a lot of different brands there, but that kind of ASO style is what I like to use. I think it gives probably the best support.
All right, one of the coworkers that I have, the Aircast type brands, where it's like mm-hmm. it's rigid and it's tall. He said he's seen more like fibular fractures with a brace like that than a just say like a McDavid, where it has the heel lock strap and that kind of thing. Have you seen any research saying something like that?
So which one has he seen more fibular fractures with, the Aircast ones?
The Aircast ones.
Yeah. They are so rigid, and that's one of the reasons that's one of the injuries that ankle taping or bracing can cause is, you know, it's very rigid up to a point, and then the force has to go somewhere, and sometimes it goes out through the tibia or fibula, and we're starting to see a fair number of fractures just proximal to where that tape or brace is. The more rigid the brace, the more likely you probably are to have the weak link and get a fracture there. I think that's completely reasonable. Now, the Aircast ones post-injury, when you're kind of in that inflammatory phase and early on just trying to get back to ambulation, they do provide pretty reasonable support for that ankle and foot. And they do a pretty good job of helping push some of the swelling out too. So I don't think they're a bad immediate post-injury option. But they're certainly, I would never dream of putting somebody in one of those for performance.
Okay, that is quite fair enough. So they're good if you're using them immediately. They're actually highly effective for immediate. But mm-hmm. but again, if you're bracing or taping during play and competition, then you're, again, increasing the likelihood for your athlete to get injured somewhere further up the chain. And, you know, it's the same thing because I tell them all the time, after an ankle injury, we practice walking, right? I'm like, look, you're mm-hmm. limping. When you're limping, you're going to make your knee, your hip, or your other side of your body hurt. So we have to practice walking. We have to practice going through that full range of motion. And, you know, it just makes perfect sense because when we tape, it gets tight. It restricts the motion. So then they ended up displacing that force somewhere. So,
absolutely.
All right. Tiana has another question.
What can we do to help spread the current understanding of the brace tape argument?
That's the age-old question. You know, it's something I think the NATA is trying to do with an updated or fairly recently updated position statement. We as clinicians getting the word out there and understanding ourselves that what works the best and what doesn't work. I think we are our own biggest advocates. And the more we continue to tape and brace and all that stuff, the more society is going to still think that that's the best intervention to do. And I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater by any stretch of the imagination. There is a time and a place for taping and bracing. But the more we continue to do it as athletic trainers and clinicians, when it's not the most appropriate time, the more society is going to continue to accept that that's still the best practice. Our competencies and proficiencies in athletic training education are starting to catch up with what the trends are right now, but we're still going to have to know that skill set. So that can never completely come out because it's not always a bad thing. And I have to stress that it is very patient specific. So to say that you should never tape or brace again would be completely ignorant on my part. To say you should do it to every single patient would also be completely ignorant on my part. It has to be a well-managed case every single time. And you have to do the right rehab. You have to do the right prevention on the front end. And you have to make sure that they get back to the best function possible. That's the ultimate line with anything, with ankle taping, knee rehab, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's a patient-specific approach. You need to use the same systematic approach every single time.
All right. I don't know if I have much more. It seems like I keep throwing out like situations, but it all comes back to the same. But then, you know, I like what you did say there is we're kind of our own worst enemies, you know, with the naming thing of athletic trainer versus trainer. Well, we're the ones that most often say trainer or allow people to say it and, you know, respond to it, that kind of thing. We're the ones that continue to brace or continue to allow the coach to dictate how we are going to treat. And I mean, I'll raise my hand. I know that the live stream is having difficulties. So if you can't see it, I'm raising my hand. I'm guilty, right? So the coach says, hey, I want all the players taped for game day. Okay. I'm like, you know what, coach? Okay. You buy the tape. I'll let my kids practice. It's not a big deal because to me, it's not worth the argument. You know, I want, but at the same time, we're using that approach, like give and take, whereas, okay, they're going to come in here and get taped, but to get taped every single time, you have to do the ankle rehab exercises and, you know, the calf raises, the balancing, the TheraBand exercises. So instead of just saying, no, we're not doing it, right? I'm allowing my kids to practice. I'm giving in some so that I can teach the kids how to do the ankle rehab. And so like when I talked to Alicia from AT Advantage last week, she was saying having an athletic trainer in the school part-time or a little bit is better than none at all, because then they see the value and then they increase what they're doing with the athletic trainers or the amount they're paying. And so I think it's the same deal here. How do you feel about that? Is taping them on game day a terrible idea because it sets up expectation that that's the cure-all, or doing it with the requirement of the rehab, is that an acceptable way to compromise?
Well, I've got a few thoughts. So on the rehab, if they're just going through the motions of doing the exercises, the balance, whatever, they're probably not getting much, if any, benefit from it. All rehab programs should be specifically tailored to the individual needs. Maybe it's somebody who has a crazy dorsiflexion restriction that they need work through. Maybe it's somebody who doesn't have good balance. Well, why do they have good balance? Is it a joint mobility problem? Is it a fundamental stability problem? Is it a strength problem? It really comes down to diagnosing and understanding the body mechanics at a level where you can correct whatever dysfunction they have. So I think just going through the motions, yes, it's a good policy, and I'd rather see them doing that than nothing at all. but it's still probably missing the boat a little bit on a good comprehensive program. At the same time, you know, the taping on game day versus practice day, I was always taught practice makes permanent, and the way you practice is how you're going to perform. So if you don't practice with it that way, you probably shouldn't perform with it that way.
Yeah, see, that's what I always say. It's like, look, you practice 4 days a week and play one, you're four times more likely to get injured in practice than you are in a game. Yeah, I mean, just the pure numbers, right? I mean, even at that, practice is like 2.5-3 hours long, where the one game is 2.5 hours long. So you're even more likely because you're spending more time at practice. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough situation. You know, like you said, it takes a long time to change old habits. Some of them are very old school, and they're, well, I want them taped. I want them taped.
Okay. Absolutely. And I mean, and coming into, you know, I came into a fairly unique situation where they hadn't had athletic trainers for, well, really forever. You know, most of the schools that we're covering now have never had them. So they didn't really have an expectation other than, well, when I played in college, you know, everybody taped everything. Well, that's not how we're doing things. And so there wasn't a culture of everybody gets all this stuff every day. And we just set our foot down and said, we're not starting that culture. Well, everybody else does it. Well, they really don't. And we'll see what your injury rates are like compared to their injury rates at the end of the season if you do it our way. And, you know, a couple of my coaches evaluated similar schools that were doing a lot of the taping and bracing and everything else, and then looked at the injuries they had and went, oh, well, maybe you're onto something. So it really gets – it really takes coach buy-in, and honestly – athletic trainers, you know, we have all for years and years and years kind of catered to people, and it's going to take people standing up and being a jerk like I am and saying, no, that's not what's best for you. I know you think it's what's best for you, but no, I mean, you also got to remember that, you know, 40 years ago, doctors used to smoke in neonatal intensive care units. So Keep that in mind every time you remember you think about, you know, well, this is what we've done and I've had success with it, so we're going to keep doing it. Well, maybe that's not the best thing.
Right. So on that same note, again, kind of to bring it all together, that taping and bracing can, especially for an extended period of time, can make you more likely to get injured. So the best path is a comprehensive individual strengthening rehabilitation program to correct or prevent that injury. So there's a lot of people that don't have the FMS. And actually, since I've been talking to you and to Mike and to Josh and those guys on the podcast, I've tried, you know, they talk a lot about the pelvic stuff, like the hip stuff. And so I'm trying to say, okay, well, let me see you do a squat. Let me see you do a lunge. Let me see you do this and that. But I haven't been trained to look at it that way, or trained to see which, you know, maybe I just didn't pay attention enough, but which muscle should be firing first, or which one is slightly off. So for someone who's, it's not really a reality to go and get trained in FMS in the next few years or SFMA, how are they going to provide that comprehensive care that you're talking about?
Well, I think our clinical skills and clinical training as athletic trainers is certainly adequate enough to identify all those different areas. You know, you keep hearing people talk about the ankle and the knee and the hip and everything else. So use your clinical skills. I mean, maybe you don't have a systematic approach like the SFMA in your tool bag to run through the entire body in less than 5 minutes and then break out what you need to. It might take you a little longer to get there, but you still have the same clinical skills to look at hip range of motion, to look at and to feel, you know, the different endpoints at the joints. You know, if you look at hip and you, they've got 10 degrees of internal rotation bilaterally, well, you know that that should be 35 to 45 degrees. You know that the infeel is a firm infeel, which is a which is one that indicates just a tight joint capsule. So use your clinical skills as an athletic trainer and open up that hip joint. You know, I think a lot of people put these different systems on a pedestal that there's some magic, wonderful way. It's just really a systematic approach, and you can come up with your own systematic approach to do that. It's just a matter of figuring out what works best for you. And there's no reason that, because ultimately the correction skills are what you've already been taught and are licensed to do as an athletic trainer. The system just gives you an algorithm and a systematic approach to get to the answer, and it helps you get to the answer quicker. That's really all the systems do. Now, they're, you know, the second levels of everything with more of the corrective strategies, they can give you some additional information on how to correct things, maybe you know, skin the cat a little more efficiently, so to speak. But there's certainly nothing in them that will prohibit you from still getting to the same answer. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It just, like you said, just maybe a lot more efficient if you have those tools and you have practice using them.
Absolutely.
So
yeah. And the folks you mentioned that have talked about it and that use these systems, I'm one of them. You know, if folks want to reach out to me, I'd be more than happy to talk to you and help you try to come up with a more streamlined approach to getting this better care and better evaluation to your kids. That's what my side business of Lightning Performance Solutions, that's why I made it as a platform to help do that. So certainly be happy to talk with anybody that wants to.
All right. So they could contact you. What's the best way to contact you then, since you've already thrown that out there?
So lightningpersol at gmail.com. That email is on my website, lightningperformancesolutions.com as well.
All right. Lightningperformancesolutions.com. Brett McQueen said he can help you create a system to be more efficient in evaluating, figuring out where the problem is, whether it's the hip, the knee, the ankle, somewhere, wherever it is in that chain, and then you can perform a better comprehensive rehab program for each of your athletes, and then reduce the amount of taping and bracing that you need to do, and you know, you can have results similar to what he's got, where you can show your coaches, hey, we're doing these exercises, we don't need to spend $500 a year on tape, and you know, we can spend $50 in every 2 years, like Brett has done, right? So he said one box of tape has lasted 2 years, and you know, a box of tape about now costs about $45-$50. So, and he still got it. He still has it there. So I mean, that's a lot more cool T-shirts I could buy with $450. So,
absolutely,
right? Or a lot more silly toys, things that I probably don't need. So since we're talking about research, has there been any research about students taping versus professional taping, the efficiency of a high school or even a college student versus the professional, like as in me or you?
You know, there are a couple studies, and I don't remember who did them or where they came from, but I do remember running across them. You know, it depends on what variable you're looking at with each one. If you want to look at if you're looking at comparing fundamentals of tape jobs, I think intuitively your students are probably going to go through the same steps every single time and try to get it exactly right, because they haven't developed bad habits yet. Whereas a lot of us who've been, you know, who've taped 10, 12,000 ankles, 100,000 ankles, you kind of just get in a groove and you're kind of on autopilot, and maybe you're not providing the best tape job anymore. I don't necessarily know that there's – I remember a study evaluating the two, but I do not remember what it said. But I think intuitively you could look at that and go, well, I don't know, maybe a higher level student who's still, you know, who has the mechanics down – but isn't really fully comfortable yet, they might provide a better, more supportive tape job than what a seasoned vet would, because you should get on autopilot. And not that I do a ton of taping, and honestly, you know, I would classify myself not really as an expert taper anymore, because I do it so seldomly. I mean, I think I've taped 4 ankles this basketball season, and basketball season's almost over. So it is one of those, I have to remember each time, okay, this is where it goes. Here we go. But it's certainly not probably a student grade tape job, but it's not the same as what somebody who does 10 a day is doing either. So I don't know. That'd be an interesting question to look at.
Yeah. Well, I figured, I mean, you're, like I said, you're the self-proclaimed research nerd or geek, whichever term it is you like. So that's all for you.
My coworkers call me nerd man.
Nerd man. I am not a, this is my research right here, talking to you or talking to other professionals. Right. So I just don't get excited about reading those articles. All right. So I'm going to just kind of shoot off the hip here. All right. So hypothetically, this same athlete, let's say, he's in the return to play process from an ankle sprain, maybe in the later stages. You got to pick one of the two. Are you going to tape? Are you going to let him go without?
I let him go without every single time.
All right. So would you rather tape or brace? You got to pick one of the two.
I have to tape or brace. I'm going to brace.
Okay. All right. So if we're going to brace, would you rather put him in a neoprene sleeve or a lace-up brace with no extra straps?
Lace-up brace.
All right. So lace-up brace or a lace-up brace that has the heel lock straps as well?
Lace-up brace with heel lock straps.
All right. So, and then if we're going to compare bracing versus going without, again, an athlete that's in the late stages, you got to pick one of the two.
Without limit playing time.
Without limit playing time. Of course, again, in case you missed it, and I know that we had several people logged into the live show, and it's so disappointing that it's showing that it's live here on my YouTube panel there, but for some reason, something is not connecting. But when you're using a free service like Hangouts on Air, not much I can do about it, right? I can complain, sure, but I get what I pay for. So I'm going to kind of summarize it all up. Brett McQueen, research nerd. His coworkers call him Nerd Man because he loves looking at research. He is an adjunct professor at Park University in athletic training. And so he researches a big part of what he does. And looking at lots of different research studies, he's come to the conclusion that taping and bracing is most likely detrimental to the long-term health of your athlete, and that not doing anything is also detrimental. So you need to be able to come up with your own systematic approach to improve the strength and functionality of the entire chain, including the ankle, the knee, and the hip, to prevent and care for most of the injuries. If you have to tape or brace, that the lace-up brace with straps is going to be the best choice out of one of those. And whichever brand it is that you prefer, and just as a side note, he prefers the ASO brands. Not that he has any sort of commission or anything. But all right, so does that more or less summarize our conversation?
Sounds pretty good.
So, all right, well, Brett, why don't you give us your contact information one more time so that if someone wants to contact you about lightningperformancesolutions.com, right? Lightning
Performance? Yep, lightningperformancesolutions.com.
And then that has your contact information. That's the easiest way. So
yeah, it's Brett the easiest
McQueen,
way.
Or you can look up Brett McQueen on Twitter or Instagram, Facebook.
Yep.
All right, so you can find him on one of those, connect with him. Like I said, this is the third time he's been on the podcast. I met him at SWATA, where he was talking about the functional movement systems, and I was like, what is this guy talking about? He doesn't know anything. And I was like, oh, wait, maybe he does. So then, you know, got it. And, you know, 3 conversations later, I'm realizing that I should have paid more attention in college or something. So, all right, again, the resources, the page that has the show notes is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/bracing. So that's where, once you hear this on the podcast, that's where you'll find this episode, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/bracing. Our official hydration equipment of the Sports Medicine Broadcast is Frio Hydration. That's my friend Robbie. I just released an episode, or a little short episode with him, where he talked about getting his heart restarted. It's a really cool story, so you should check it out. He had AFib, and then he was actually conscious when they restarted his heart. So, quite the story. But not only that, if you email getfrio at friohydration.com, you'll receive half off your custom graphics, which is pretty cool. And then after five people have placed their orders, then Frio Hydration will give me an ice chest that I can give away to one of you guys. So somebody out there listening, if you're wanting a free Icy Tech, which is like the Yeti type coolers, ice chest, then get some of your other colleagues to buy one of the Frio Hydration units for their school, and then I'll maybe give that one away to you. sportshealth.com/SMB, where they're giving away gift cards. And I just talked with Israel Montano. He was logged in here earlier, and he did a little Periscope about his mixing wand that he got from sportshealth.com/SMB. So you can enter right there, sportshealth.com/SMB, using the keyword SPATS for February, and then Bubba for March. My friend Bubba is going to be helping me out at SPATS, where we're going to be broadcasting live this summer. So again, GHATS, Greater Houston Athletic Training Society, is one that sponsors the CEUs. Always thankful for them, the stuff they do there. And then the Valley Athletic Trainers, that's where I'll be broadcasting. They're the one that put on the summer workshop that I'll be checking out this summer. So, Brett, any final thoughts?
No, I think we're pretty much summed up. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me
at lightningperformancesolutions.com. That's not a very good radio voice, is it?
Works for me.
All right, and then one last listener feedback. Susan Detweiler wrote that it was great resources, talking about episode 187, Functional Rehab. She's always looking for new ways to get athletes back stronger and better than before. So, Brett, I was actually one of the things where we've been talking about FMS, and I had somebody talking about functional rehab, so doing exercises that help return them to play. And so I think part of our conversations about the FMS have inspired lots of different offshoots where we've talked about stuff like that. So appreciate you being willing to speak there at SWAT. And I know you said you're going to be speaking about five or so times this year, but keep up the good work. Keep encouraging athletic trainers, both young and old, to be learning better ways to treat our athletes. So
absolutely.
I am Jeremy Jackson for the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where we broadcast live almost every Wednesday. Coming up in March 2nd, 2016, we'll have our 200th episode. Check it out. 4-hour ordeal using Blab. Hopefully lots of prizes, lots of cool stuff going on there. SportsMedicineBroadcast.com. Jeremy Jackson, PHS Sports Med on Twitter. That is a wrap.